All right. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hey guys, welcome to Debunked, our podcast where we debunk and discuss quite literally everything about anything. My name is Soma, and I'll be your host today along with
Ilosh,
Rohit,
and Tejas. So, without further ado, let's begin. All of you know, today is September 11th. I hope you do. Otherwise, fix your calendar, please. But not all of you may know what occurred 19 years ago, today on September 11th.
A terrorist attack on some of the most beloved symbols of America sent the entire nation, no, the entire world into a state of fear. A war on terror itself has begun.
The country itself ramped up its security and introduced new policies, such as the introduction of the Department of Homeland Security.
However, none of these securities could alleviate the everlasting damage that the attack had done to each American since.
In today's episode, we want to cover details of the actual attack, where the four planes hit. After that, we want to explain to you the backstory and how Al-Qaeda's position was financially, socially, and their preparation behind the attack. We also want to discuss quickly their true motive for the attack. After that, we want to go into some more specific details. For example, the story of the man in the red bandana. We also want to go into more depth about conspiracy theories behind Flight 93 and whether President Bush could have had some part in the terrorist attack. Finally, we want to explain to you what 9/11 means to us today. So let's start with the attack. Kailash?
So there were four planes that were used in the attack that day. Two of them were bound for each tower in the Twin Towers in New York. One of them was bound for the White House and the other was bound for the Pentagon. Obviously, we know three of them made it to the target, but the other one, there was a struggle between the hijackers and the passengers, and a plane crash landed in a field in Pennsylvania.
So who wants to talk about the plane that attacked the North Tower?
Well, there isn't much detail we can go into it other than the fact that it hit the North Tower first, then soon followed the plane hitting the South Tower, after which extensive damage had occurred. Obviously, first responders came onto the scene. Many of them went into the building. Many people died on impact of the planes, but then soon after, the structural integrity of the buildings themselves were compromised, so the buildings did collapse, and unfortunately, thousands of lives were lost due to the collapse and then the ensuing search after.
This whole scenario took place in the heart of New York City, and it was a really tragic attack. It was really unfortunate that a lot of people remember this specific situation the most, and it was really unfortunate that so many people were unable to make it out alive.
Big props to all of the first responders that, you know, that sacrificed their lives, put them on the line, hopefully to save some people. And, you know, there were people on, like, the lower floors. A good amount of them were saved, but unfortunately, people on the higher floors were trapped, and most of them either the structure collapsed on them, and some people jumped just to have a quicker end.
Now, obviously, we must acknowledge the significance of this attack on the Twin Towers, especially because they were civilian targets, you know. Actual civilians died. Many people had families. Obviously, living in the East Coast, we hear stories about people who lost their families or stories about people whose friends lost their family members in this horrific attack. It's just very heart-wrenching to hear how it damaged America got directly, American citizens were directly from this attack, and how its effect on other people kind of spread the damage and had it ripple out towards all Americans as a whole.
Now, of course, don't take this in the wrong way, but like anything else we do in life, a terrorist attack, unfortunately, also does require planning.
All right, so Al-Qaeda planned this attack as a way to really ridicule the United States. I mean, they targeted the Pentagon, the White House, and the World Trade Center. And the World Trade Center was a symbol for America and its capitalist system, right? And even by planning the attack on September 11th, 911, our emergency number, like, it was really damaging to America as a whole, seeing something like so central to this country and its principles, as long as all the civilians to be attacked.
Yeah, especially because Al-Qaeda itself did not support many of America's foreign relations and foreign policies, especially one with Israel. They tried to cripple America by, you know, doing this attack, obviously. First targeting a symbol for American strength, then targeting actual strategic points in the American government and those who are in charge of American security in the Pentagon, you know, targeting. It was a very coordinated attack, especially since multiple flights were hijacked and then all of them had to crash land within a couple of hours of each other. Very devastating blows given in quick succession to, in some ways, cripple America. And in some senses, we could say that Al-Qaeda did succeed in spreading fear, not only through America, but throughout the world.
And as we all know, Osama bin Laden, he was actually the son of a wealthy Saudi Arabian businessman. And he used this money to fund his group and to fund all the endeavors needed to carry out this attack.
Now we move on to the interesting topic of Flight 93, the infamous flight which was re-hijacked by the passengers of the plane. This plane was supposed to hit Washington, D.C., our White House, and it is a miracle that the passengers on the plane were able to fight back and take control to prevent the attack. It's really important to know that this plane was delayed. It was one of the last to leave. And because of this, the passengers on the plane had already known about the details of what happened in New York. Because of this, they were able to suspect that another attack was going to take place when their plane was hijacked. The passengers fought the four hijackers and are suspected to have attacked the cockpit with a fire extinguisher. The plane then flipped over and sped toward the ground at upwards of 500 miles per hour, crashing in a rural field all the way in Pennsylvania near Shanksville. At 10:10 a.m. This is 2 hours after the other attacks. Unfortunately, all 44 people aboard were killed. While most people do theorize that the intended target was the White House, people do also believe that it could have been the U.S. Capitol or Camp David, although it is most likely the White House. There are also theories that one of several nuclear power plants were the target across the eastern seaboard.
And obviously, we know that Flight 93 is an example of bravery. Many people take a silver lining from this and look at this as an example of American heroism, you know, realizing that this could have potentially been an attack on the country. These people kind of, you know, having, obviously, there was a risk of them losing their lives in the struggle for the plane itself. They gave it their all and managed to actually, you know, divert the flight from its intended target, which, and if it, you know, imagining had it hit its intended target, regardless of whether it is the White House or the Capitol or Camp David, it would have crippled the nation much further. You know, it would have resulted in, again, massive casualties. It would have.
Yes, as Rohit explained, the 44 passengers on board were just as heroic as the first responders who responded to the two plane attacks in New York City. And speaking of these heroes, many of you may have heard the story of the man in the red bandana. A lot of us also may have studied his story in school. He was a heroic person who is credited with helping at least 10 people escape the tower. However, that number may not seem like a lot to you, but every life matters, and he sacrificed his own life. He could have very well made it out of the building alive, but he went back to help 10 other people escape the tower before he unfortunately passed away. He has a memorial in Manhattan City, and many people visit it, and it's really nice to know that people are acknowledging his story. Moving on from the topic of the stories of the heroes we had, from the first responders to the passengers on Flight 93 to the man in the red bandana, we also need to acknowledge the number of personal tragedies which occurred. Most of us live in New Jersey, just under New York City. And I personally, well, all of us used to go to J.P. Stevens High School. Most of us still do. And we've heard stories, so many stories, every day on 9/11 in history class of students whose parents and relatives were affected by this tragedy. We've heard stories from our teachers as well about the actual date in school where a lot of the kids were getting calls from New York City. The principal's office was flooded with calls. And it was just a really heartbreaking moment. Everyone was in panic and fear. Most of our parents work in New York City. Mine does. My dad, in fact, was very close to being affected by this tragedy. He told me that, I'm very lucky. He's very lucky. But he told me that that was the one day he didn't go to work. And he missed his subway or something. I don't remember the exact story. But he was unable to make it to work on time that day. And since the attack happened at 8, or I believe around 8:18 EST a.m., he was informed of the attack before he got to work. And luckily, he was unaffected by it. He worked very close to the World Trade Center. I believe he worked on it, actually, in the lower floors. But I'm very lucky. He's very lucky. And unfortunately for all the other people who were impacted negatively by this, I'm really fortunate that my father made it out of this tragedy untouched. Kailash, do you want to share a story?
So, yeah. Back in my ninth grade class, my freshman year of high school, I remember our math teacher was talking to us about it, and she told us this story where, I don't remember exactly where it was, but she said she went to a school pretty close, like around the Bayonne area, and they actually were able to go upstairs, and they were able to have a straight view of what was actually happening, like, and it, they were watching it for a while before, you know, the principal told them to, you know, go home because it was a terrorist attack.
Yeah, even my middle school history teacher said something along those lines. Her school was, I believe it was right across the Hudson River, and she was able to actually see, she was in high school at that time, so she was actually able to see the attack happen through a window. And when the second plane hit, obviously the school was dismissed, but she told us how she was pretty much gutted after looking at this attack. And then later on seeing on TV what happened to the Pentagon and with Flight 93. Obviously there's many more stories we could go into for this. Most of our teachers or the people who, or the adults that we look up to know of this event, and they know how much it affected them personally and how much it affected America as a whole. It plunged America into a state of fear, and it in general, it did more destruction than people see or know the event actually did. Like that one short moment where everything physically happened was, you know, damaging enough, but like the ripple effects after, where things like the Patriot Act got introduced and racial profiling was actively practiced throughout the country because everybody was, you know, afraid of people, you know, brown people or like people who maybe they follow Islam, you know, they might have an Islamic name, or people of color who might possibly be suspected of being terrorists. You know, everybody kind of started getting racially profiled. There were unwarranted searches. Everything got very bad after. It was a very fearful time.
And yeah, I'd like to talk more about the ripple effects. So I also have my own story. Even though I wasn't born at the time, obviously my parents and my relatives, you know, they were alive during that time. And my uncle was living in the U.S. Now, he wasn't working at the World Trade Center. He was he ran a business in New York City. But what ended up affecting my family was how much immigration laws and regulations tightened up after the September 11th attacks. Now, I was born here in the U.S., but my father came here later, actually, and he was in India. And the only reason that he was able to immigrate here was that my uncle worked something out throughout his company. He made my father a partner so that he could have him immigrate here, and the rest of my family couldn't come. And if my uncle wasn't here earlier, I might have never been born in the U.S., and I might have never come to this country.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this country still stayed the land of opportunity even after the attack. The only problem was that now this opportunity was very limited to a very few amount of people, you know. People like us, we are obviously from Southeast Asia, we're Indian, but people generally would have tended to racially profile us or would have tended to associate us and they would have alleged that we are possibly linked to terrorists. They would have had unwarranted searches on us. We've heard stories about people who have been detained with no reason, simply for being brown or having the name Muhammad. You know, they just were detained and they were searched without permission. Their rights were violated. Yet nobody did anything until like the Bush administration ended. Now, 9/11 did start a tradition of political fear-mongering, especially against immigrants. We see people actively fighting against the proposition of taking in refugees because they think they might sneak in terrorists or something like that. We know that right after 9/11, fear-mongering and using it to justify racial profiling and racism in general was, you know, heavily used. It may be dialed down now, but it still exists. You know, it doesn't exist in as great a magnitude, but it still exists. And I feel like the 9/11 in general, it still holds relevance today because the scars that it left on America did allow America to make some changes for the better, but a lot of it is, I feel like, still kind of damaged, and it's still, you know, it's those wounds haven't fully healed yet. And, you know, before anything bad happens again like this, or we must collectively focus on bettering America and, you know, stepping away from all of the racial profiling and fear-mongering against foreigners, you know, all the xenophobia. We could kind of try and dial it down to nothing rather than, you know, have it be subliminal, because until we make America better in those standpoints, I feel like 9/11 will continue to hold relevance in the sense that it is still, you know, a wound on America that hasn't healed yet. Now, before we leave off, we wanted to get a quick word in from our sponsors. So stay tuned for our next episode, where we will discuss something new and break down everything for you. It would be appreciated if you could drop us a like and write us a review on your preferred platform. Go check out our website for more information and check out our Instagram and share our podcast with your friends if you really liked it. We're really grateful for those of you who've been tuned with us so far, and we hope you can grow with us on this journey wherever it takes us. And
hit that outro!